IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road.
Welcome to you, honey, and I'm so glad to hear your voice because we're separate today, and we don't like that very much, do we?
No, I am in Salt Lake City, and you are at Bear Lake. That should be an interesting conversation.
Well, and it's especially hard right now because we just had our anniversary, and we were so much together day before yesterday, and then I had to leave yesterday, and now I'm a lone man at Bear Lake.
Well, you poor thing. Honestly, you've been surrounded, though, by a lot of people because we have an interesting anniversary every year because our oldest daughter, our firstborn child, was born on our first anniversary. That may sound crazy to you. It was kind of crazy, but it happened, and so we get to celebrate together, which is always a fun day.
So it was kind of typical on Wednesday because we celebrated with Saren for lunch, and then we celebrated just the two of us together for dinner, and they were both pretty great, weren't they?
They were awesome. It was so fun.
I think, you know, as far as the meal goes, it was a little better in the evening than at lunch.
Right.
We have this favorite place. If you happen to live in Salt Lake and you've never been to Valter's, V-A-L-T-E-R-S, Valter's Osteria, you've missed out on something pretty great.
It is amazing. Although Valter has passed on, they have taken his great ideas and made it even better. It is fabulous food, but we're not used to really fabulous food, honey. So it was hard to recover.
Well, let's talk a little about that because it's just fun to reminisce. So we're only reminiscing from two nights ago, but Valter is this really enigmatic, sort of enthusiastic, amazing Italian guy who did pass away a couple of years ago. But before he did, he started this remarkable restaurant or osteria. And we got to really like Valter. We'd go in there and he'd come over and put his arms around Linda and welcome us in. And he just had so much enthusiasm and just an absolute genius when it comes to food. I mean, we got the story from one of his associates on Wednesday night about how it took 7 months to negotiate with this bread company to get just exactly the right Italian bread to complement his food. And that's how he did everything. And the beautiful thing is since he passed on, since Valter passed, they haven't changed one single thing. The menu's exactly the same. The bread's exactly the same. The pasta sampler, which is to die for, is just the same. And it's like, you know, it's a monument. It's like an everlasting monument, this restaurant, to Valter himself.
Absolutely. Food is an art, you know? And we don't... We're pretty simple in the way we eat right now, and we never know where we're going to be from one day to the next because we have two locations. So we eat well, but not extraordinarily exotically.
Yeah, but we sure did on Wednesday, and we had the best time because we just had a little list, and we just sat there and took our time. I bet we were there for 3 hours, and you know, we'd just kind of eat a little, and then we'd talk a little, and then we'd work on our two little lists. We each had a list called 56 best things about us, U.S., big capitals. And we were just trying to just be appreciative and grateful for, you know, what are the 56 best things about us? I'm not telling you what I love about you, and you're not necessarily telling me what you love about me. We're saying us. What are the 56 best things about the combination of us? And
Yeah. It was.
man, you came up with some great ones, honey.
Well, it was a lot of fun to reminisce and think about. By the time you've married 56 years, you know a lot about each other and you've had a lot of adventures together. And it really was fun to think back about all the funny inside jokes we've had, all the disasters we've had, all the wonderful times we've had. It really is a good, it's a good thing to do on an anniversary.
I'll say that those little lists have been, they've become suddenly very valuable. If the house burned down tomorrow, I'd grab that list and carry it out with me.
Well, when we die, I don't know if our kids are even going to understand any of it
No
because
one will. No one will. They'll say, "What is this even talking about?"
but I do have to say, we do have a remarkable daughter that was born on that day. Our oldest child has been such a blessing to our family. She has been so insightful and helped us raise those kids in a lot of ways from the time she was 6 or 5 or 4. Anyway, she is amazing and we appreciate her so much.
Well, Saren is her name, Saren Page Iyer loosely. She's now 55 years old. She's the mother of five incredible kids, two of whom are twins and who are now serving LDS missions, one in Guatemala and one in Mexico. And her daughter, her only daughter, Liza, or Eliza, but Liza as I call her, is in Mexico setting up a community center in a lovely little town in Mexico, just because that's what she does. She's come home from her missionary service in a very dry and desolate part of Chile. And her two older boys, Ashton and Isaac, are just so great. And we're just so proud of that oldest daughter. And I'll tell you, some people have, I think one time someone said, "How have you managed to raise nine children?" And I remember one time the answer that came to me is, "Well, the first one was just so great that it sort of did the job for us. The others just had to follow her example."
Even though they are all so unique, they do appreciate her, all those younger kids, for what she did to help us out.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Linda, we had a lot of real deep interest, I think, in our podcast last week, and we rushed through it so fast because it's a complicated subject. I mean, just to review, we talked about what we call the three deceivers, the three attitudes or approaches to life that we all pursue them. We all pursue them in the first half of life, and they're useful. They're powerful concepts, but they run out of gas in the second half of life, and they begin to actually become deceptive in how they affect us. And we rush through those a little bit. The idea of the three things that we call the three deceivers are the pursuit of control, the pursuit of ownership, and the pursuit of independence. And those all seem so good, and they all serve us well in many ways in the first half of our lives. But as we get a little older, we begin to examine and we begin to say to ourselves, we really don't control very much. Most things are beyond our control. And we shouldn't really want to try to control a lot of things. We shouldn't try to control our own children. We shouldn't try to control other people. We shouldn't try to control every circumstance we get into. We should realize that many things, most things, happen in spite of us, not because of us, and we need to learn how to deal with that. So we need to get past this paradigm of control, and we need to get past this paradigm of ownership, where life is all about competing and how much we have and quantity and trying to get more and so on. And we need to settle into a better mentality where we're just involved in, really trying to appreciate the stewardships we have, not the ownership, because everything passes through us. And And it's really God, it's the universe, it's something far bigger that has real ownership, and we do not. And third, independence, we need to get past that. We need to not only acknowledge, but relish the fact that we're interdependent with so many people, especially our spouses and our families, but really with everyone. And we're so dependent on God and on things, forces that are beyond our control. And moving from that paradigm of control, ownership, and independence into a second half way of thinking, where instead of control, we're trying to find serendipity. We're trying to find those beautiful moments that come to us and appreciate them, the tender mercies of life. And instead of trying so hard to own more things, we're just happy to have stewardship over things. And stewardship is a completely different concept, where we don't try to force things. And we don't feel that we own things. We feel that we are stewards over things. And then moving towards what we call synergicity, where we understand that it's not about independence. It's about working together. It's about sharing. It's about the synergy that comes when we work together on things and appreciate each other's qualities, and where we have a win-win mentality instead of a win-lose mentality. Wow, I'm going on and on. Interrupt me, Linda. I'm going a little nuts here.
Well, it's hard to interrupt you from this distance, but I do have to say, as you've been going through that, wow, control? I mean, you know, when we had those little kids, we were trying to control them, but I just felt there was so much out of my control because, for one thing, we had old beat-up cars, and you never knew when they were going to break down on a given day. And it was such a crazy, discombobulated time. I just felt like I really was trying to control what was going on, starting with myself. But it was just so hard to control. But I was thinking about it a lot. I mean, I thought about the day while you were talking, I thought about the day that I had, I think, 12 Cub Scouts in our big old van out on the freeway. We'd gone to some kind of event and had a flat tire. And I thought, oh my gosh, what can I do? No cell phone and no way to contact anybody, absolutely no control over the situation. And I think so often we run into that as parents. I do have to say that, of course, a great good Samaritan stopped and helped me, and somehow we got the tire fixed. But there's so many things that are out of our control, especially when our children are little and they have their own minds. You know, they have an idea of what they want to do that may coincide or, I mean, clash with what we want to do. So control is totally a big deal when we have children that are small. And then it doesn't ever end, right? Except when they finally leave, and then you think, okay, I have no control now, no control over these kids.
Well, and you know, what we've come to the conclusion that control, ownership, and independence they're like a laboratory. They're like a learning experience. We want to teach our children to control themselves. We want to teach our children to be independent and to kind of, you know, take over their own lives. And we want to teach them to have skin in the game, to own things, to feel ownership of their toys and their clothes and their education and so on. But those are not permanent, eternal concepts. They're economic concepts, and we all need to master them while we're younger. But as we get older, we need to move beyond that and sort of accept the fact that they become deceivers. And when we think we control things, then we start, the three deceivers work together. We think, oh, I got to control that. I've got to own more things. I have to take care of this stuff I own. And it's just this tiresome mentality that runs out of gas. And we want to say, no, 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 I'm a little beyond that now. I'm moving to a higher level. I'm moving to second half thinking, where I want to accept the gifts of the universe. I want to have serendipity. I want to have a state of mind where I'm so aware and observant that I frequently find something better than what I thought I was looking for or whatever. So we want to shift gears and get more into that serendipity. We want to shift away from ownership to stewardship. And we certainly want to shift from independence to interdependence and synergy and synergicity. So what we want to do a little bit today after we take a little break is sort of answer the question, why is it better to have a mentality of serendipity, stewardship, and synergicity? How does that produce better fruits in the latter part of our life than the old tired ideas of control, ownership, and independence? And why is it just more true in the second half of life? So stay with us for a minute. We're going to kind of round this out. You can think of this as part two of the discussion we started last week on the podcast.
So hang on, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. Well, as I listened to you talk, I thought of so many things. I hope our listeners are thinking about their own lives as they ponder these three things: control, ownership, and independence, because there are so many things that we do that are involved in that we don't even think about. We need to focus on that. I need to focus on that. For example, when I felt like I had no control over my life, when I was on that freeway with those Cub Scouts with a flat tire, it was so serendipity. This guy, this beautiful man came along and helped me. He knew what to do. He somehow knew how to do the jack. I guess all men know how to do that. I don't know. I would have no idea how to do it. But it was just so serendipity that he happened to be just coming along right at that moment to help me. But that happens so often in our lives if we realize that we really don't control anything. I mean, it is just so fun to say, I wonder what's going to happen to me today, instead of, I know what's going to happen to me today. I am going to make this happen. It really changes the way you look at life.
So let's take about 2 minutes on each of the transitions. The first one, transferring our paradigm from control to serendipity, and then we'll move on to the other two. And we just had this big family reunion, honey, and it's a perfect illustration of this transition. I remember years ago when we would have our big family reunion, the kids would come in from everywhere. And I'm just going to speak for myself. I look back and I realize I was really trying to control the reunion. I had an agenda. We were going to do this. We were going to do this. We were going to do this. And I wanted to talk about this. I wanted to be sure we discussed these things and so on. And the whole thing felt a little forced. It was like, oh, they're out on the boat again. We need to have this meeting. Oh, can't we get them off the tennis court and talk about this important thing I have in my mind? I want to control the outcome of this reunion. And it just, it just didn't ever feel quite right. And as we got a little older and as we began to realize that the important thing is we're together. And yeah, we have some things we hope come up, but let's not try to force everything. Let's let things kind of come together according to serendipity. And, I remember thinking back to the sort of the origin of the whole serendipity story for us is, when we were at the Harvard Business School, you'll remember, Linda, my favorite professor was this guy named Sterling Livingstone. And his mantra was, never be surprised. If you are surprised, it's because you failed to do sufficient contingency planning. You should always be in control. You should act, never react. You need to grasp things and lead out and make things happen. And then, I went in between, we ended up, I ended up doing an internship in Hawaii, and I met this wonderful couple. I'll make this story brief, but it's a great story. Rusty and Honey, these two Hawaiians that picked me up when I was hitchhiking on the big island of Hawaii. I was trying to get from Kona all the way over to Hilo. And they picked me up, and it was, in those days, like an eight-hour drive all the way across the island. We just kept going, and they kept showing me things. They wanted to show me a forest or a beach or a little volcano that other tourists didn't know about or whatever. And toward the end of the day, we'd gone all the way across the island. I said, "Wow, Rusty and Honey, my new friends, how was I so lucky? You're the first car, and you picked me up, and you were going all the way to Hilo." And Rusty said, "Oh, no, we were not going to go to Hilo. We were going to the grocery store." And I'm like, "What?" He said, "But we can do that tomorrow, but we can't take you to Hilo tomorrow." And I'm like, "What?" And I realized that this guy was the opposite of my professor at the Harvard Business School. He was saying, no, we don't control anything, but opportunities come. Here you are. We can spend this day with you. We can do those other things tomorrow." And I'm like, the whole rest of the summer, I was sitting around thinking, who do I really want to be? Do I want to be Professor Livingstone and try to control everything and be uptight all the time and worried about everything? Or do I really want to be Rusty and just sort of let life happen? And I mean, that seems so funny to me now, because I hadn't realized that what serendipity really means is you're both. You have goals, you have a list, you try to accomplish things every day, but you keep your mind open so that when something better comes along, like a relationship or a friendship or an idea or a beautiful sunset, you're willing to sort of back off from your list and do the thing that has come to you by serendipity. And that's the difference in those two paradigms.
I love that story, Honey. And I have to say, I've heard you tell it quite a few times, but I've never heard you say that they showed you a little volcano that nobody knew about.
Well, maybe that's an oxymoron. Volcanoes are never little.
Everybody would know about it, probably. But anyway.
When you said that, I knew you were going to call me on it.
What you're saying is so true. You've been my teacher, because I just always have felt like I need to control, you know, as a student in the university, I need to control this. I need to make this happen. I need to make this happen. And we really have to sometimes wait for something to happen to us, just be open to that and be ready to accept the things we don't expect, because they are so much more fun than the things that we think we are going after.
Absolutely. The second one, again, just to review, transferring from the paradigm of ownership to the paradigm of stewardship. Now, I mentioned last time that, you know, when you think in an ownership mentality, it's always win-lose. It's always comparing. It's always, do I have a better car than you? Do I have a bigger house than you? Do I have a larger boat than you? And if I do, I'm a little proud. And if I don't, I'm a little envious. And this whole idea of envy and jealousy or condescension and superiority just is so destructive, and it uses up so much of our energy. And if we can just say, hey, it's about stewardship. God owns everything. I'm blessed with a few little things that I'm trying to take care of, and I want to take care of them, but I don't want to think of them as mine. I want to think of them as something I'm a steward over. It just relaxes us on so many levels. And then the final one, trying to just admit how interdependent we are, how much we need other people. We spend the early part of our life wanting to be independent, wanting to just be able to handle everything ourselves and not need other people so much and so on. And the minute we get to a point in life where we can relax on that and say, boy, I'm vulnerable. I need so many people. I'm so interdependent on those I love. I'm interdependent on people that do so many things for me, and I really want to be dependent on God. It just begins to make a big difference. And this class we're trying to do now online called How to Live the Second Half of Life is really about making those three transitions and shifting to this new kind of paradigm. And I think, Linda, we ought to give people a challenge. We ought to, you know, the thing to do when you're faced with an idea that seems somewhat attractive to you, but maybe you don't know what to do with it. The thing you ought to do is experiment. And what if we were to, let's just share in the last few minutes, Linda, how we have a way of planning our day. We have a little thing I think we can describe it to you that we would invite you to try for a week and just see if it makes a difference. Let me outline it real briefly and then have you fill in what I left out, honey.
Okay.
If you would try for a week, you listeners, if this interests you at all, if you would get a little notebook, or you could do it online, but frankly, it's easier to do with a paper and pen, or just get, you know, 7 sheets of paper for the week and have those represent the days of the week and change just 3 little things in terms of how you think. Number one, before you make your list each day of all of your have to do's, all the things, and that's an important list and you need to make that list each day. But before you list those have to do's, the appointments, the obligations, the places you need to be, the times you need to do things, before you make that list, just right up at the top of the page, put 3 little blanks. And we actually call them the stewardship blanks. And just write down one thing you're going to do that day for yourself, one thing you're going to do that day for your family, and one thing you're going to do at work that isn't required of you. Just one thing that you could do that would maybe be oriented to thanking someone or working with someone. So just your choose to do for that day. What do you need that day? What does someone in your family need that day? And what does someone at work or in your professional life need that you could supply? And do the choose to do's up at the top before you list the have to do's. So that's the stewardship exercise. Then the serendipity one is even more fun. It's just drawing a line down the center of your page and putting all your list on the left of the line. All the appointments, all the schedule, but on the right, leaving a blank and making a note when something serendipity happens to you that day. When you meet an unexpected person, when you notice something beautiful, when you have a new idea, all the things you couldn't plan, but that you're watching for because you're trying to have this state of mind where you notice things that come along that were not on your radar, that were not a part of your plan. Just write them down on the right side of the page. And then finally, the third one, we call them synergicity bands, right at the first of the day and at the end of the day. In many cases, this will be your prayer if you're a religious person, when you have your prayer, or when you meditate in the morning, and when you sort of recalibrate at the end of the day and think back through the day, just making a little note on whatever inspiration you feel, whatever sort of help you get from a higher source, whatever little things you notice, whatever answers you get to your prayer, or whatever ideas you get during your meditation, and just write those in at the beginning and the end of the day. If you'll try that for a week, and we're going to put in the show notes our book on this happiness paradox if you want to go further into it. But try some of these things in your own life and develop your own pattern for moving beyond the first half thinking of control, ownership, and independence, and into the second half thinking of Serendipity, stewardship, and synergicity. I'm out of breath, Linda. Give some credibility to what we've just said.
You're my teacher, honey, and you do that so beautifully. And I'm just looking at my planner right now because I have a crazy day. I'm trying to plan my class reunion, and I have to say I have not done that this morning. On my top line, I've written find a Bluetooth player. That doesn't really make it. It really is so important to focus on just the things that are really important at that moment, on that day, just for a minute. And I have done this better than I am doing it right now. But I think everybody listening is feeling the same way. Like, whoa, you know, that's a lot. You have to really focus your mind on really things that are important. And how can I do that when I have so many other important things to think about? And it really is crucial. Just a little call to one of the kids to see how they're doing, a little email to a grandchild. We have grandchildren scattered all over the world right now. And if I just take the time to take a minute and say, how are you doing? I love you. I know you're doing great. Anyway, it really is much more important than anything on your list.
Well, you really captured it, honey. I think the way to do this is just find 10 minutes at the beginning of the day to focus on what really matters that day, not on all the things you have to do. And then find just 10 minutes at the end of the day before you go to bed to think back and say, what really did matter? And where was the serendipity and the stewardship and the synergy today? And it's a gradual process. But as you try to do just that for 10 minutes at the beginning and the end of the day, you'll find your whole paradigm, your whole outlook on life begins to change.
Absolutely. We hope we've given you something to think about today. I have to say, honey, you gave me some things to think about, and I appreciate that. And we hope to see you again next time on IRS on the Road. Bye-bye.